Everybody keeps asking if I'm okay. But what do you say when you've been drowning so long? You don't even remember what breathing feels like anymore. I've been fighting my mind every night alone, trying to survive in a place that don't feel like home. People see my face, but they don't know how close I've been to emotionally letting go. I smile so nobody notices pain, but inside my thoughts been going insane. Every memory still leaves stains, and every heartbreak still remains. I gave love to people who disappeared, gave trust and got betrayal for years. Now every conversation feels weird, because attachment became connected to fear. And honestly, I'm exhausted deeply, tired of pretending life don't defeat me, tired of carrying trauma secretly, while everybody keeps expecting strength from me. I got nights where silence gets dangerous. That's when depression starts changing us, turning overthinking into self-destruction, till breathing itself feels painful enough. I can't save myself, no matter how hard I try. These thoughts keep pulling me under, while I'm screaming silently inside, yeah. I'm losing this war with my mind, trying to survive one night at a time. And honestly, the hardest part is nobody seeing the pain I hide. Yeah. I remember nights sitting on my bedroom floor, asking God what I'm suffering for. Why every year hurts more and peace keeps walking out the door. I grew up believing pain was normal, that silence was safer than being emotional. So I buried feelings deep internally till depression started controlling me. Now my mind never rests peacefully, every thought attacks repeatedly, turning small problems into tragedies and happiness into uncertainty. People say just stay positive casually, like trauma disappears magically, but scars don't heal instantly, especially when they cut emotionally. And maybe that's why I turn to music, because speaking pain feels therapeutic. Maybe broken souls use lyrics to survive things too painful to deal with. I can't save myself, no matter. Sometimes I wonder if people would care if one day I disappear from here. Would they finally?
A man who wished to be known only as John Doe placed a call to 911 just before 3 a.m. on Saturday, June 4th, 2022. From the second floor of his home on Lenox Street in Detroit's East Side, he watched as a mid-sized white four-door sedan stopped out front, its trunk sitting open. He heard a woman's scream, then silence. Moments before the call, he recorded a video of the vehicle with his phone.
I'm trying to be as quiet as possible, but I think somebody just shot a woman. She was running down the street, and she was screaming, "Help me!" And I heard a gunshot go off.
What street is that on, sir?
Lenox Street.
But you don't know for sure that she was shot?
I don't know, but after, I have a video of the dude's car, and he it was a person in the passenger seat, and he ran back to the car, and he closed the trunk. I don't know if she was in the trunk, but his trunk was open. Like, she probably got out and took off, but I still hear some crunching, like, over in across the street in the backyard somewhere, and the trunk was open when I looked out the window, but when I heard her exact words were, "Help me," and she screamed, and then you heard the gunshot go off. And then everything got quiet. And then like 2 minutes later, I decided to take a video of the car because the car was still sitting there with the trunk door open and the driver door open.
So is it in the backyard next door to you or across the street?
Across the street. It's like a open field, but it's a lot of sticks and twigs.
As the caller recorded the video, he could hear rustling noises from the vacant lot near his house. Moments later, the video captured a man running back to the vehicle, close the trunk, and drive off. Convinced that he had just witnessed portions of a murder, John Doe waited patiently for the police to arrive on scene. But that night, they never came. Just after noon the following day, the anonymous man chose to investigate. In the vacant lot, just inside the vegetation that lined the edge of the property, he found a body.
Yes, I called about somebody getting shot last night, and the police never came out, and I'm walking down the street, and her body is right here.
What's the location?
Lenox and Canfield.
My mama.
Matter of fact, I got a video of the nigga car who did it, and I'm about to tell you what time I took the video.
Okay.
At 2:52 a.m., probably at 2:50, the lady was screaming help. She was running down the street, and then all you heard was a gunshot. And then it got quiet. And then I called you guys, and y'all ain't do shit. And now this lady dead right here by my house.
When Detroit PD arrived, they found what appeared to be drag marks in the dirt, leading beyond the curtain of a driveway next to the lot. A shell casing was located in front of the house on the street. Past the overgrown sidewalk, the victim was laying among the trash and foliage. A young woman, she was only partially dressed and carried no personal items or ID. Indeed, it would take until the completion of the autopsy the next day to formally identify her, based primarily upon her distinctive tattoos. 24-year-old Natalia Morse, who was known to friends as Sparkles, had suffered blunt force trauma to multiple areas of her body. Though a shot had been fired, the autopsy found that Natalia did not die of a gunshot wound. She had been beaten to death. The young and outgoing older sister was not known to have any enemies. The news of her brutal killing was both a horrible shock as well as a mystery to her family.
She was viciously beaten, left in a field. Someone out there did this to her. She didn't deserve this.
Last time I saw her, I hugged her and told her I love her, and my kids was about to graduate, so she was talking about, "Oh, I'm gonna come down to the graduation." Yeah, she died the day before her sisters graduated. They had to walk, go across stage the next day knowing their sister died. I told them, "Do it for your sister." So they went across stage for her. They did it for her.
There were multiple home security cameras in the area surrounding Lenox Street. Investigators surveying the neighborhood, however, could not find a single one that was working properly and had activated around 3 a.m., which gave a view of Natalia's killer. They had only the video taken at a distance from John Doe's phone. They also learned that Natalia drove a white sedan, similar to the one seen on Lenox Street that night. It seems her Ford Focus was set aflame sometime during the night. That call to 911 was placed around 3:30 a.m.
Detroit 911, what's the address of the emergency?
The car is already on fire. The white Ford Focus.
After firefighters put out the flames, the Focus was towed to a secure area. In the back seat, only mildly damaged, was a backpack. In the bag, investigators found Natalia's bank cards and other personal effects, including her cell phone. Investigators began aligning the cell phone location data with the Ford Focus on its route from Lenox Street, where John Doe captured the driver on camera, to the area near Lappin Street, where it was set aflame. Beginning at about 11:30 p.m. on June 3rd, Natalia's vehicle first drove to Kilbourne Street, which is in the Connor neighborhood of the East Side. It is primarily residential. From Kilbourne, the car made a lengthy stop near 7 Mile and Evergreen, a commercial area with plenty of parking. Cameras did not capture the individuals inside of the parked vehicle during this time, but they did pick up on the vehicle's movements when the journey resumed. Curiously, before arriving at Lenox, the car drove back towards Dickerson Avenue, which crosses Kilbourne Street. And that would not be the last time. Minutes before 3 a.m., the car is captured driving towards Lenox, with its trunk already open. By 3:03, it is fleeing the area. Before it was set on fire, the car made one final stop, somewhere on Kilbourne Street.
Imagine being able to build an app.
Natalia's cell phone data not only confirmed her movements on the night she died, investigators were also able to access some of her messaging history. They found that on the day she died, she was in contact with a man named Therese. The two made frequent arrangements to meet. Their relationship did not appear to be a romantic one, exactly, but rather a physical and casual one. As it turns out, Therese lived in the house on Kilbourne Street. He was brought in for questioning, and a search warrant was executed on his home.
So I got the call, I'm like, man, something happened to Sparkles, because that's what we call it Sparkle, because that's her little nickname. I'm like, bro, something happened to Sparkles? And I called one of her friends. One of her friends didn't even know what happened to her. I'm like, what happened to Sparkles? She's like, I don't know, why you say that? Like, cause motherfucker, it's on the internet. Something just happened to her. She called. She like, I'm gonna call you back. Hang up and they'll call me back. Oh my God.
Therese was extremely cooperative with the Detroit detectives. He handed over his cell phone for a data extraction. He offered his DNA for testing against samples from the Ford Focus and the crime scene. And he took a polygraph test. Therese explained that he had not seen Natalia for several days before her death. And he had never been in her car.
So it's safe to say your DNA is not going to be nowhere in her car.
Never. Okay. Won't be at all. Never been in her car at all.
Or on her.
Messages supported Therese's assertions. He passed his polygraph. The search of his home did not turn up anything suspicious. DNA testing would take some time, but detectives were already seeking new leads. The link to Kilbourne Street was clear. Could Natalia have known anyone else on that street?
You know, she messed with anybody on your block? Has she ever mentioned that she fucked around with anybody over there?
I told you, we don't really mention nothing right to each other, but she was.
We're trying to get to the bottom of it. And again, you know, if this clears you, that's fine. But rest assured, if it's some other things that we can't clear up that are pointing to you, mm-hmm, we're going to have to address them. Okay?
Therese was eliminated as a suspect, though it quickly became clear that he was far from the only man that Natalia had been communicating with. Indeed, her messaging history showed hookups with multiple men. In March of that year, the 24-year-old had lost her job at a Chrysler dealership, leaving her finances in delicate shape. At some point that spring, according to one of her closest friends, Natalia went from being a frequent dater to charging. Her family did not know.
What was her job? What's her profession?
Is that a profession?
It's the oldest profession in the world.
Well, I mean, well, you know what her job was or what she was doing. So, I mean.
Yes, I might know, but I still.
Oh, you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Okay, so pretty much she's on the app meeting people, like, whatever. Yeah, that's what she was doing.
What app was she?
She never told me. She didn't want me to know.
Okay.
She didn't want me to know.
Natayla kept her new choice of work close to the chest. Already a private person, she shared details of this part of her life with very few individuals.
Besides you, who else does she really confide in? Do you know?
Not many people. She was very, like, I guess you could say, like, secretive. Because, obviously, she felt judged because she knew she wasn't doing the right thing.
Right.
So, nobody pretty much knew what she had going on.
She would not tell her friend which online applications she used to connect with clients. She did not share names. Those who were in the know cautioned her to be careful and stay safe, particularly after she mentioned being on an app named Inmate Delight.
The lady at Motor City.
Okay.
Because one day she got into it with a guy, and they were in the thing. She's screaming for help and all this. And I'm, like, trying to tell her, like, you need to stop going out in the middle of the night.
Right.
Because anything can happen.
And how would she communicate with?
She told me it was an app called Inmate Delight. I believe that's what she told me. And then.
Say that app name again.
Inmate Delight.
Inmate Delight?
Yeah, but I'm not sure. And I kept asking her if that's the name of it. She said, yeah.
Investigators discovered that there was one other man that Natayla was in contact with on the day she died who raised red flags, 23-year-old Jonathan Lamont Welch. Jonathan had a criminal record, one that had started only 2 days before the murder. On June 2nd, his longtime girlfriend and mother to their baby boy, Zelaya Frazier, reported a brutal assault. She told Detroit PD that she awoke in the night around 3 a.m. to her boyfriend, angry and pulling her from the bedroom down the stairs to their living room. Prepared for her at the bottom of the stairs were a collection of implements, a gasoline can, a pair of garden shears, an extension cord, a belt, a towel, a metal pole, a drill, and a circular saw. She told police that someone must have tried to call her cell phone in the night, at which point Jonathan tried to unlock the phone to see who called, but he didn't have the passcode. This, Zelaya said, prompted his rage. Several hours later, Zelaya escaped the house and managed to call police. By that time, Jonathan had grabbed the car keys and taken off. Charges for assault, as well as torture, were pursued, but Jonathan could not be found. Given this violent report and his connection to Natayla Morse, police began a surveillance operation on his house on Kilbourne Street. While watching the house on the corner of Kilbourne and Dickerson, officers observed two individuals approach the door and attempt to gain entry. They were Jonathan's parents, his mother, Flossie Bray, and stepfather, Robert Bray Jr. When their vehicle was stopped, officers noticed Flossie was carrying a registered handgun, a purple and black Taurus 9mm semi-automatic. It was temporarily seized and she was brought in for questioning. The aim was to gain information about her son, and specifically, his whereabouts. She was told only that the entire street was under surveillance for an investigation, nothing about Natayla's murder or her son as the prime suspect.
And so far, nobody is not, they told me nothing, just asking me questions.
Right. So, like I said, we have a little sting operation going on over there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So the sting operation is whoever's over in that area coming off that block, we'll get them if they have any kind of warrants or anything. If they're.
But what do getting picked up from my son's house got to do with the operation?
Detective James is a homicide detective. The lady said that on the phone when she called up for it.
Flossie was not impressed. She told the detectives very little, claiming that she did not know where her son was. She also claimed to be unaware of the state of his relationship with the mother of his young son, whom he had recently hospitalized, Zelaya Frazier.
Yeah, they're not talking. He hasn't seen her in about a week.
Oh, okay. Something going on between them?
Nah, I don't know. I try to mind my own business, right. Stay out of other people's business. I don't know what they be black going on.
Right.
Is my son down there?
No, your son's not down there. I have no idea where your son is.
So why did they send me down here? That's what I'm saying.
I can't tell you that. I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
Okay, thank you.
Flossie walked out of the station on June 10th. Jonathan was apprehended that same day with an arrest warrant listing homicide as the central charge. His booking photos showed partially healed scratches up and down his left arm and chest. He had tattoos of the women in his life, Flossie Bray and Zelaya Frazier. When it came time for his bond, only the assault and torture charges were presented. A buccal swab had been obtained from Jonathan while in custody to test against the samples from Natalia's case, though yet again, these results would take some time. He was assigned a $100,000 bond. His mother, Flossie, found a bail bondsman to cover the 10% necessary to secure his release. Sometime between mid-June and early July, the record varies. Jonathan was fixed with an ankle monitor and told to remain at his parents' home on Kenosha Street in Harper Woods. Shortly after his release, Zelaya was compelled to bring their 18-month-old son to the home to see him, despite a restraining order that she had in place. On July 10th, from inside one of the bedrooms of the Bray family home, Zelaya placed a call to 911.
I'm being held hostage. You're being held hostage. My house father, he is trying to kill me.
Is he at the house right now?
Yes.
And how is he trying to kill you?
Okay, he's not letting me leave the house. His mother is hiding me in the room.
Okay, is he at the location?
Yes.
And is he trying to harm you?
I haven't been able to leave out the house.
For how long?
My name is Shane.
Moments following the dispatcher's question, screams could be heard from inside the house. The audio becomes muffled and incoherent. Then the call drops. But only 2 minutes after the first call, a second one was placed. This one originated from a neighbor. Flossie Bray had stumbled through her door, collapsing in the entranceway, a knife lodged in her back.
Hey, I need an ambulance ASAP at 20641 Kenosha. I have a woman in my house who is scared of that.
Ma'am?
Yes.
What's your address?
She's scared of that. She's passing out.
Okay, all right. I'll have an ambulance on the way.
Who did this to you?
To the caller.
Who did this to you?
Officers responded to the neighbor's address. As they approached, they found Flossie on the floor just inside the door.
Or you better step them up. It looks bad.
She said her son stabbed her in the back, stabbed the whole family.
Where's he at?
I don't know, but come here, look.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying. They got to get here. Hurry up.
Stabbing the whole family.
Where's he at? What house?
What house? What house? Come on, baby, stay with me. What house?
Come on. Talk to me.
Hey, come on.
I can't move that knife because it'll only make it worse.
Right. I know she wants me to get the fan on her and get ice water, but I can't move her. I can't let go of her because it'll go right in her back for her. Come on,
baby.
What's
the problem? Where's the guy at? Where's the suspect?
Stay down. Stay down. Stay down. Stay there.
Son is stabbing everybody in the house, but we're trying to find out what address.
What's your address?
Hurry up. No, stay down. Stay down.
Flossie was able to communicate bits and pieces to her neighbor and the responding officers, but was unable to articulate a response to the most pressing question. Where was the attack taking place? The neighbors had seen each other only in passing. They did not know for certain who lived where. It was not clear which house Flossie had run from, nor whether anyone else was still in danger. As additional officers arrived on scene, they sought out other neighbors who could point them in the right direction.
Come with me, come with me. Just don't touch anything, all right? I want you to just look at her face. Look at her face, tell her where she lives.
Right there.
Where, right here? This greenhouse?
Right there, with that, right, 206.
Okay, there's blood on the door, all right.
Flossie was placed in an ambulance while officers tried to get a grasp on the situation. They did not know if the attack was ongoing, though they suspected that was the case. It was unclear how many other people were still inside the Bray house, though Zelaya, who had placed the 911 call, was still unaccounted for. What they did know was that they had an interaction with Robert Bray Jr. only the night before. He had been involved in a traffic accident and was facing drug charges.
Son is still over there. It's a wife, he got a girlfriend, and they got a baby. And it's a man over there. He just had an accident last night.
Yeah, we know about the man with the accident.
So that's the son car right there. So he in the house.
Okay. Hey, Matt. Mike. Here's what we got. Yeah. He's in the house. The son's in the house with a wife and a kid.
16.
According to the neighbor.
Do we have a phone number for the house?
Learning that both Jonathan and Robert were also inside the house, officers armed themselves and began to surround the building. As they caught a glimpse inside, they saw smoke. A fire had been lit towards the back of the house.
I got moving inside the house. He's setting it on fire. The kitchen's on fire.
Minutes later, from the street, a child was spotted in the backyard.
Coming out of the back. We got a kid coming out of the back.
The young boy was rescued from the yard unharmed.
Grab that baby.
The fate of his mother and grandfather remained unclear as more officers arrived and established a perimeter around the property.
Do we know how many more kids are in that house? How many kids do they have? Okay, one kid? Okay, all right, so we got all the babies out. All right.
Only minutes after recovering the child, as the responders planned next steps, gunshots rang out.
Oh, shit!
Four to five shots were fired from inside the house, out of the front window and east side window, where two officers were positioned. They believed that at least two of these shots struck a house positioned behind them on the street. The Wayne County Special Response Team was called. Firefighters had already arrived, though were held back by the gunfire and potential hostage situation. Flames could be seen up towards the back of the building from the kitchen, then periodically calming down. The smoke, however, continued to build. As the evening wore on, random gunshots were fired out on the street.
Yeah, over there.
One more shot fired.
He's got a pretty good view, and he's got a fire going in there. So if anything, this guy's going to just fucking walk out and probably just start shooting like crazy.
All right, we got flames in the house.
60 more shots fired.
Just before dusk, Jonathan Welch appeared at the front door, wearing only his boxer shorts with his hands up.
Just a guy on the porch on his belly. Crawl down the stairs!
It was not clear to the officers at that time if he or his father was the shooter. Indeed, Robert Bray Jr.'s encounter after his car accident the night before had resulted in his arrest. He was already known to the responders on scene. it was possible Jonathan was another victim who was escaping the smoke-filled home. Flossie's statements made to the first responders on scene that her son had stabbed her were not taken immediately as fact, nor was this information widely shared amongst the responders in the chaos of the standoff.
Crawl into that tree!
Yes, sir.
Crawl into that tree!
Yes, sir.
Keep crawling!
Yes, sir.
Move!
Yes, sir.
Move!
Yes, sir.
Move!
Yes, sir.
Jonathan crawled across the front yard and onto the street, slowly and cautiously.
Keep moving.
Yes, sir.
Keep moving.
Yes,
keep
sir.
Coming to me. Let's
yes,
go.
Sir.
Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Yep, you're doing a good job, man. Let's go.
Yes, sir.
Keep coming.
Yes, sir.
Keep coming.
Yes, sir.
Keep coming.
Yes, sir.
Keep coming.
Yes, sir.
Behind this fire truck.
Huh?
Behind the fire truck. Let's go. Let's go.
Yes, sir.
We just want to help you, man. Keep coming. Let's
yes,
go.
Sir.
Let's go.
No,
you
no,
got
no.
a gun on you?
No, sir.
No?
No, sir.
Cuff him. Don't make a move. You gotta
no,
reach
sir.
For anything in your fucking
no,
pocket.
Sir. No,
I will shoot you.
He cuffed me. I'm not doing nothing. Don't resist me. Head down. He cuffed me, officer. He cuffed me.
Who else is in that house? Who else is in that house?
Father and girlfriend.
Your father and girlfriend? Who's got the gun?
I don't got a gun, sir.
Fire, Fox. Shut my fucking mouth.
Go ahead, sir.
When Jonathan was securely detained, he told officers that his father was the man with the gun.
In the house.
Girlfriend.
Girlfriend and stepfather. The guy arrested last night for heroin?
Yeah, that was
yeah.
him.
Who's
yeah.
got the gun?
Yeah, the guy who arrested for heroin.
Okay, what's his problem?
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Is his name, what's his name again?
Robert Gray.
Yeah, Robert Gray.
Yeah.
What's his deal right now?
I don't know.
Is there any more babies in there?
No, I got one son.
All adults?
Yes, I got one son. Is he out? Is my son out?
The baby,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Yeah, he's out. We got the son. All right.
Don't feel
you're fine, man. You participated. I appreciate it.
Handcuffed and with police escort, he was sent immediately to the hospital for treatment for smoke inhalation.
He just crawled out of the house. I don't know if suspect or not.
Officers, anybody else in there?
He just said it was the father, that old guy that we got. I'm pushing 160 on the heart right now. I can't believe it. I went up and grabbed that kid. I think that's what's going through my head right now. He could have fucking popped me.
As the evening wore on, the special response team arrived. The fire department kept a close eye on the flames. After Jonathan emerged from the house, there were no further shots fired, nor movement spotted from within. As the situation remained uncertain, officers stayed in position. The standoff would last roughly 7 hours.
No. I'm starting to think Dad might be dead.
Special response team members began breaking windows throughout the residence for a view of anyone potentially inside. Eventually, teams broke the side windows in the house, gushing water inside and putting an end to both the blaze and the tension on the street.
I just want this to be over with.
In suppressing the fire, the front door was forced open. Just inside the threshold was Zelaya Frazier. She had experienced severe head trauma and was clearly deceased. Her autopsy would find numerous blows made with a hard object, possibly a hammer. 70-year-old Robert was found on the east side entrance on the landing area. This was near to where the fire had been at its strongest. Robert had also quite possibly been struck with a hammer. He had also been stabbed. Investigators speculated that Jonathan had set the kitchen aflame to burn evidence. He appeared to be slightly wet when he left the house, as though he had just taken a shower. Clothing was observed on the stovetop. Detectives recovered the handgun that had been fired at them from the house, a purple and black 9mm. It was Flossie Bray's gun. Flossie remained in hospital for several days following the attack. She was in critical condition and eventually put on life support. She passed away from her injuries days later.
When my daughter told me...
3 days after the massacre at the house on Kenosha, Jonathan was released from the hospital and sat with Harper Woods detectives to speak about the incident. They did not, at first, discuss the murder of Natalia Morse. Jonathan told them that Zelaya and their son had come to live with him weeks before at the house on Kenosha. He also claimed to have a good relationship with everyone prior to their murders.
Now, you indicated that Zelaya and your son Samuel had been living there recently. When did they move back in there? How long have they been staying there?
I got out on the...
You got out on the 8th. Of July.
The 8th of July.
Which would have been Friday, last Friday?
I didn't get out last Friday. I've been out for a month.
You've been out for a month?
Yeah, I've been at their house for a month.
Oh, okay.
The whole article, everything is just, hold on one second, because they said they arrested me on the 2nd. When they watched me walk away, they arrested me on the 10th.
And again,
basically got out on the 14th.
Okay.
So if I got out
June.
Yeah, June 14th.
You've been out a month.
Right.
I'm only going by on what a prosecutor told me.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you the facts.
What's your relationship with mom and dad? Pretty good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What's your relationship with your fiance, Zelaya? You guys pretty good?
Yeah, it's pretty
short
good.
So whatever dinner didn't happen a month ago, you guys kind of patched that up?
Right.
Okay, correct.
Jonathan provided a bizarre explanation for what had happened inside his parents' house on the day of the attack. His version of events attempted to account for everything. The use of multiple weapons, the knife, the hammer, the gun. He subtly mentioned having showered just before events unfolded. He had no explanation for how the fire was started, however. Jonathan claimed self-defense. His parents were arguing with each other over his father's traffic accident and drug arrest the day before. That spilled over to a physical fight between Flossie and Zelaya over the assault charges against Jonathan. Exiting the shower, he decided to intervene, at which point the scene descended into a sort of family brawl.
He hit me again in my arm with the hammer.
I thought you just said he had a gun.
No, he had a gun. He did have a gun. When he pulled the trigger... The gun didn't go off. So when the gun didn't go off, he hit me in my arm with the hammer. When he hit me in my arm...
So did he have a gun in one hand and a hammer in the other then?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
So he hit me in my
arm.
What
kind of hammer was it?
I don't know the specific hammer. I'm in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in the bathroom, when I scoop his leg and I hit him, we both fall. We fall on top of each other. I hit him again. Once I hit him, that's when I'm crawling out the bathroom. I feel the smoke. So now when I crawl out the bathroom, I'm crawling towards the front door.
Okay. How did this fire start in the house?
I don't know how the fire started. I was just coming back to consciousness. I don't know how the fire started or anything about the fire.
Jonathan's version of events only loosely aligned with the physical evidence recovered from the scene. He could not account for the countless and varied injuries sustained by his family. It was determined that the fire had been purposefully set, even without accounting for the many officers who witnessed it starting and stopping while they observed the scene from a distance.
Your rendition of what happened, Jonathan, and I'm only stating this based on what Zelaya said to us via 911, because she was able to call 911. And your mom said to us specifically when we arrived, and to include me, I was one of the first ones to arrive. Okay. So Zelaya calls 911 and indicates that she was hiding in a bedroom and can't leave, that your mom was protecting her from you and you were trying to kill her and you had a knife.
How my mama protecting her from me and my mama got a licensed gun?
Right. But
that don't make sense.
Analyzing the evidence we recovered from the house. You know, for instance, your mom's gun, the knife, the hammer, the lighters, and all those items I just told you about, Jonathan, the knife that we got out of your mom's back, the purple and black gun, the hammer, and the lighters that we recovered from the living room. Every one of those items, Jonathan, has your DNA on them. Every one of them.
Jonathan Welch was charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. Then, on August 2nd, the DNA results were returned from the testing in the case of Natalia Morse. They had a match. He was a contributor to the samples found inside of the Ford Focus, as well as on her person. Jonathan had a 4th murder charge filed against him. These were in addition to attempted murder charges for firing his mother's handgun directly at 2 officers. On November 1st, 2023, he pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 45 to 70 years in prison.
He held her hostage for hours. He did torture.
My sister was fully naked when she ran out the house and ran to a nearby neighbor house to get help. How do you let somebody out that did that to somebody? How do you let them out?
And she was ready for her new beginning because she was talking about the future a lot.
You ever seen him before prior to all of this?
No, it honestly kind of doesn't really make any sense how they have any connection whatsoever. So did he deserve a bond? No, especially that low. It's absurd. I'm honestly speechless. Definitely needs to become a big major thing because this happens all the time. You know, so much could have been prevented if they would have really looked at the bigger picture. You're a threat to the community. She was the oldest sibling of the 7 of us. She was loving, the most kindest soul you could ever meet. Like, she had drive and she was all about going to work, working on herself, her career. She was really driven to do better.
And that was the tragic case of Natalia Morse, Zelaya Frazier, as well as Flossie and Robert Bray.
Everybody keeps asking if I'm okay. But what do you say when you've been drowning so long? You don't even remember what breathing feels like anymore. I've been fighting my mind every night alone, trying to survive in a place that don't feel like home. People see my face, but they don't know how close I've been to emotionally letting go. I smile so nobody notices pain, but inside my thoughts been going insane. Every memory still leaves stains and every heartbreak still remains. I gave love to people who disappeared, gave trust and got betrayal for years. Now every conversation feels weird because attachment became connected to fear. And honestly, I'm exhausted deeply, tired of pretending life don't defeat me, tired of carrying trauma secretly while everybody keeps expecting strength from me. I got nights where silence gets dangerous. That's when depression starts changing us, turning overthinking into self-destruction till breathing itself feels painful enough. I can't save myself, no matter how hard I try. These thoughts keep pulling me under. seeing the pain I hide. Yeah. I remember nights sitting on my bedroom floor, asking God what I'm suffering for. Why every year hurts more and peace keeps walking out the door. I grew up believing pain was normal, that silence was safer than being emotional. So I buried feelings deep internally till depression started controlling me. Now my mind never rests peacefully, every thought attacks repeatedly, turning small problems into tragedies and happiness into uncertainty. People say just stay positive casually, like trauma disappears magically, but scars don't heal instantly, especially when they cut emotionally. And maybe that's why I turn to music, because speaking pain feels therapeutic. Maybe broken souls use lyrics to survive things too painful to deal with. I can't save myself, no matter how hard I try. These thoughts keep pulling me under while I'm screaming silently. Trying to survive one night at a time. And honestly, the hardest part is nobody seeing the pain I hide. Sometimes I wonder if people would care if one day I disappear from here. Would they finally